Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, June 17th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. Also with me today, I have our friendly neighborhood robot, John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Equally happy to be here. Good morning.
He's measured. I'm sure that measurement is accurate. The first thing I want to talk about today is, Andrew, you wrote a piece about Tim Cook's graduation address at Stanford and some interesting stuff he had to say.
This was Charlotte who wrote it up.
Sorry, Charlotte wrote it. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good speech. He said some interesting things, as always, I think, calling out Silicon Valley and how if you create chaos, you need to take responsibility for it. Mm-hmm. And I think you talked about privacy, too. So some pretty good stuff, I think.
And the thing that I think is always interesting about whatever public appearance he makes is part of what he's doing is, like, for example, at Stanford, he's delivering a graduation address at Stanford, right? But also he's sort of advancing Apple's corporate view of stuff in certain ways, like, privacy is important, and if you're creating this chaos, it's sort of on you to help clean it up, and you know, whether it's privacy or human rights or whatever kind of stuff it is that's kind of, you know, the hot topic for Apple at the time, it seems like that's a thing that he ends up talking about publicly. Whatever kind of address it is, whatever context it is that he's making this statement, he sits down for an interview, whether it's with a TV program. Or he sits down with a magazine or newspaper and talks about something or gives a speech somewhere, you know, like this. It always seems like there's a little bit more Apple as a company perspective that comes out in that. What do you think, John?
Yeah, Kelly, all the executives should be worried because Tim Cook has the ear of the president. I think he's visited the president more often than any other executive. Some executives kind of walked away from the Technology Council. Some are allergic to Washington. But Tim Cook sits and talks to the president toe to toe and has his ear. And that should be alarming to other executives. And that Tim Cook can back up his pronouncements and his technology with, you know, the ear of the president of the United States. And so this is powerful stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing that is sort of interesting to me about this is that it seems like overall, Tim Cook makes a lot more public appearances than Steve Jobs did. Because he shows up at all the media events and all the things that Apple invites reporters to. But then also he does like... It seems like he does a graduation address every year or almost every year and is at Dub Dub at the beginning of June every year and sits down with interviews for various publications. Again, whether it's, you know, newspapers or television or magazines, and does a lot of other sort of public facing stuff. So I know he's a regular on Twitter, but there wasn't a whole lot of Twitter before Steve Jobs passed, so he didn't spend a whole lot of time there, obviously. But there's been a lot more, the CEO of Apple role seems like it's gotten a lot more public with Tim in it than it ever was with Steve, even though Steve was arguably, at this point, I don't know, Steve was arguably a better known figure for a lot of the time that Tim was running things. But now I think, you know, as far as like recognition, if you ask somebody who runs Apple, I think that they're going to know it's Tim Cook almost all the time now, like compared
to Steve Jobs spent most of his career being the CEO of a one product company, the Macintosh.
Right.
So with Apple doing as many things as it's doing, I think Tim Cook has to get out there and be in front of a lot of different things.
Yeah. But it's interesting to see that, like, in person, just, you know, like, over time, and watching how he has turned this role into something of his own. I never got the feeling Steve was into that, you know. Steve was never into standing up in front of a bunch of people. Steve was into showing off the new thing that Apple made. He was never into being, he was never all that comfortable, it didn't seem like, out on stage in front of people. Like, all he wanted to do was talk about the cool new thing that makes it so watching TV is awesome, or so that you can carry the internet in your pocket, or 1,000 songs. you know, on this little device, that kind of stuff. Like, it was more to him about showing off the tech than it was about getting to present it to a bunch of people. And yeah, he was good at it, but I never got the feeling that was the point of what he was doing. And I feel like with Tim, it's a little bit of both. Like, he's comfortable out there. He likes sitting down and talking to people. And I think that's part of why it's become more public. Well, I think if he didn't want to do it, we wouldn't see him as much.
Technology has become a lot more politicized. When Steve Jobs was CEO, technology was about the PC war and about saving the world by embracing the Mac as opposed to the evil PC world. Now, with privacy and security so much an issue, it's a more political thing, and you gotta be out in front of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think Tim is perfect for this, and I think that's probably the difference between Steve and Tim is that Steve, he was the innovator. Like, if we went back in time, I'm not sure if Tim could have started Apple. Mm-hmm. That was Steve's job, but now Tim can take Apple to even greater heights, and he can also play the political game. Mm-hmm. Whereas Steve would get mad if you disagreed with him, Tim, I think, can handle the more nuanced stuff.
Exactly. I feel like Steve probably would have been the first to quit the Technology Council if he were still around and that was the situation. I kind of feel like that would be the case, you know? I'm with you on that, Andrew, I think. And I think that's an interesting perspective because it sort of seems like, you know, people complained about Tim so bitterly. I mean, somewhere right now, if you're really quiet, you can hear someone shaking their fist and saying, if Steve was still alive, you know, but like, and it doesn't matter when you're listening to this podcast, if you're really quiet, you will be able to hear that at any time, in any location. If you listen hard enough, you'll find somebody saying that. And I think Steve knew Apple was evolving and knew that Tim was the guy to lead the next iteration of Apple.
Well, this is not unique.
That was part of the smart hiring decision.
Technology world, Kelly. I was reading a recent issue of Car and Driver, and the letter sections is very interesting. For every topic and for every technology, there are people in the crowd who just love to see their name in print and love to throw rocks. And no matter what you do in print with the purest of intentions, there'll always be people who whine about, well, you picked this model instead of that model. You really should have compared this version of the Jeep Cherokee to the Ford.
So
why didn't you do that? And the editor writes back, well, because we couldn't get that model from the manufacturer. So, you know, it just goes on and on.
Oh, sure.
In every technology area. I'm sure it happens in every other area we don't dwell in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure it does. I mean, I've seen, like, I know a lot of people with podcasts about a wide variety of topics. And anytime they get into talking about, you know, three different examples of this particular genre of film or these different varieties of yarn on a knitting podcast, right? Like every single person I know who has a podcast and talks about anything and possibly compares it to something else immediately gets mail about, I can't believe you didn't include, or, you know, if you're going to talk about Cascade 220, how come you're not going to talk about Brooklyn Tweed? And, you know, if you're talking about Brooklyn Tweed, how come you're not talking about, you know, and on it goes.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, and there's a certain amount of that, that I think partly just comes from like social media. You know, it used to be you had to sit down and put pen to paper and find a stamp in order to get your opinion sent off to Car and Driver. But now you can just whip out your phone, tweet something about you all are morons because you didn't compare the Jeep Cherokee to the right model of Ford, whatever. And that's feedback. Yeah. And I think on the one hand, like it's one of those things that's great and terrible at the same time. Like, the great thing about it is that anyone can give you feedback. And the terrible thing about it is anyone can give you feedback. And
that's why it's so important to be, as a reader and a listener, to find not just people who agree with you, but professional, objective voices that are skilled at ferreting out the truth and skilled at looking at things in the best possible angle. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, curating your sources is very important, not just people who agree with you, but people who challenge you and make you think, and people who are professional and educated and trained to do this kind of thing so that you respect them.
Or at least people who are upfront enough about their biases. right? I'm a long time, just to keep using your car and driver, your car and driver example, like, I'm a long time Jeep Cherokee fan. So if I'm going to write about this thing that Ford just released that goes up against the Jeep Cherokee, you know, like, I've been up front forever about what a huge Jeep Cherokee fan. I am not, by the way. I'm Team Grand Wagoneer. It's a whole story. I'll tell you on another show. But the Grand Wagoneer Limited is one of the finest vehicles Jeep ever made. We'll talk about it another time. And if I'm going to talk about the Ford, you come in knowing that I'm partial to the Cherokee. So if I tell you, like, that this Ford thing is really fantastic and holds its own, like, that almost might get bonus points because you know how much I like this other thing instead and would prefer it. So being able to have people also be upfront about that kind of stuff, I think, is also very important. And that's one thing that we like to do, I will say, at TMO. You know, it's very clear. You know, you can go read anything that any of us write. Like, here's who I am, and here's my deal, and here's the stuff I like and don't, and whatever. And it should be pretty easy to draw a conclusion about, you know, whatever thing it is we just wrote up, you know, by being a person who reads regularly, and you know, this is the thing I'm into. This is what, you know, this is the stuff that John is passionate about. Here are the things that Andrew really likes to write up.
We agree on everything. We so often disagree. But we have professional and reasoned and rationale for our opinions seen through different lenses of experience. And that's okay.
I'm just going to point out that John and I love recording shows together. John and I enjoy hanging out together. And yet John bought a bell to bring on the Daily Observations podcast to point out when I am wrong. So, just so we're clear.
No, wait a minute. I beg to differ. I didn't buy the bell to disagree with you. I bought the bell in celebration of Craig Ferguson.
Oh, okay. So but you like to ring it in order to disagree with me. Well, you like to ring it when I'm wrong.
Well, yeah, it kind of devolved into that. But what that was the purpose of buying the bell.
Yes, okay, that's true.
Just to be clear.
Because we both enjoy the Craig Ferguson television program. If you have not seen The Late Show with Craig Ferguson, The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, go enjoy it on YouTube. It's a lot of fun. We need to move on to another topic, however. And our other topic today is that Apple, this is me being snarky, by the way, Apple is going to use machine learning in order to start making award-winning films. Does that sound about right, Andrew?
Yeah. Yeah, so Apple is definitely interested in getting winning the Oscars. And so the New York Post wrote about how right now their goal is to spend or buy or work on 6 small budget movies.
You had it right the first time. Buy Academy Awards.
Yeah. And they're spending about $5 million, anywhere up to $30 million per project. And what I thought was interesting, what Kelly was alluding to, was that it sounds like they're trying to create a formula for, like, what is the most efficient way to get an Oscars. Because they specifically, like, whatever source that the New York Times or New York Post has, like, Apple is specifically mentioning previous movies that won the award, like the Dallas Buyers Club. Mm-hmm. They mentioned Boy Erased and the Black Klansman.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're just trying to, like, try to figure out what made these movies popular and copy that.
Can you imagine the pressure the director and the, like, creative team are under? Can you imagine being called into Tim Cook's office? Well, you didn't win an Academy Award. You're fired.
Well, on the one hand, I mean, maybe, but also, I think there might be more to this story. I mean, like, yeah, of course they're gunning for awards. Like, I mean, kind of isn't everybody?
Yeah, but gunning for awards means gunning for awards means not gunning for awards. It means being true to your vision, means being creative. It means having a compelling story to tell. Everything they talked about in the event previously about the passion for changing the world and the passion for telling great stories, that starts there. Yeah. And if they had just said that, that would have been great. And if the work that they do even though they're, you know, trying to press the buttons of Hollywood, the right buttons to win awards, you don't say it and you don't push it and you don't advertise it. You just do great work. And when you win the awards, you say, oh, shucks, that's great. Thank you. But to actively go after awards by tailoring your shows, and because you want success now, and because you have to justify the money you spend, and because you want to get more subscribers, seems just so callous.
Well, yeah. So here's a quote from that. So the article says, Hollywood sources say the tech giant has been approaching, quote, elevated directors and other film talent in recent months to talk about bankrolling projects with Oscar winning potential. So it's like they're trying to game the system.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, this is also mentioned in the article. Part of what might have kicked that off is that Netflix won an Oscar for Roma. For it was best foreign film. So that might have something to do with it, I think. I mean, why would you not gun for awards? Like, I mean, I don't know. But I my question about it is...
Well, they haven't even delivered anything yet.
Right. But my question is why they're doing it.
Urgency to come out of the gate with winning awards to make it look like they're doing really well and to justify their existence. It may take years. Well,
look how long we've had Netflix before they won an Oscar. Look how long we had a Netflix Originals before they won an Oscar. So
I think Apple's being impatient.
Yeah. of course they are. But my question is, what... And this sounds odd, but my question is, what's motivating this? Because, like, is it because they want to be a service with award-winning content? In which case, they're already doing that by having Sesame Street. Sesame Street's won, I think, more Emmys than anything in the history of Emmys. And the other thing, you know, is it so that they can draw attention to the service? Because, like, if they're meeting people today and they sign deals for these kinds of movies... for these Oscar movies, right? Tomorrow, like, they're still not going to be available at launch because this is supposed to be fall. Was that what we heard? So those movies aren't going to be ready this fall. And if they're movies with anything resembling any sort of CGI effect, which most movies are these days, whether or not it's explosions in space or not, lots of movies have like a lot of post-processing that has to happen. If that's the case, then... You know, they may not even be available once we've had TV Plus for like a year. So, you know, if they sign a deal tomorrow, maybe there will be something next fall that comes out on the service, right? So,
yeah,
it's hard to say like what's doing this. Like, is it just because Apple wants good content? Because if that's the case, if what they really want to do is write checks and have awards, then they could just buy the film library from some other studio.
Well, they're discussing that according to the article, right, Andrew? Factions within Apple that are trying to decide whether they want to create content on their own or whether they want to supplement that by just like buying Sony Pictures or something like that and having a rich portfolio. Mm-hmm. So the article points out kind of in a subtle way that Apple's a new kid on the block and they've got a lot to learn yet. And that's another reason why this lobbying and over movement towards, oh, we're going to hire the best directors and we're going to do AI and we're going to win awards and then we're going to boast about that because we only do the best. That's kind of premature. It's an arrogance that's unseemly.
And I pointed out in my article, like, I think they do. What these factions inside Apple are doing, I think they're still trying to decide if they just want a streaming service or if they want to be something like Netflix. Because what happens when you subscribe to TV Plus, watch everything, and then what? Like, Apple doesn't have anything else for you to watch.
I've seen your four new shows.
Your subscription.
Yeah, I've seen your four new shows. ... Like, you know.
Well, that's an argument for making it free for a longer period than a month.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And maybe they will. Remember when we got Apple Music, it was 90 days for free.
I think it's going to be 6 months, personally.
I think they would have to do 6 months at this point.
Time.
Well, given... Here's the thing, right? Disney's streaming service debuts in the middle of November. And when Disney made the presentation about Disney Plus, the streaming service that, that they're unveiling, first of all, they gave us a price, which was nice, $7 a month. And one of the things that they said that I thought was the, one of the most interesting takeaways was the Disney Vault is now open. Everybody remember the Disney Vault? Like, you could only get movies on VHS for a certain period of time, and then they were out of print, and then they went for a ridiculous amount of money on eBay. And then they did the exact same dance with DVDs, and then they did the exact same dance with Blu-rays. So there is no more Disney Vault. For $7 a month, you just watch whatever Disney movies you want. Obviously, that comes with an asterisk, because I really doubt Song of the South is going to be on there. So when you add that, when you take what Disney has available on their streaming service, what is that, right? It's every Disney movie, all the Marvel content, and Star Wars. What's left?
Nothing else.
Right? Star Trek is locked up by CBS.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can get James Bond on anything digitally on a, as a streaming service. I know you can purchase them digitally, but I don't know that you can sit down to a streaming service and watch a James Bond film. And I'm just trying to think of like big movie franchises, because Harry Potter's on the Sci-Fi Network now. So I don't know where that, I don't know if you can stream those any place of consequence. So like when you take those things off the table, like Apple can't write a check to get this stuff out of Disney, right? Like, Disney's getting their own $7 a month from everybody.
Original notion was good. I mean, they conceived of some great original shows. And there's what, like 30 of them in your list, Andrew, that you maintain on that page?
Yeah, probably close to that.
Yeah, so, you know, their original idea was to really do great stuff and people would be attracted to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which would be great.
But now I think they're maybe, as you said, Kelly, they're getting a little maybe nervous.
Yeah.
That it won't be enough.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing is, like, you know, if you have CBS All Access, right, and you watch all of Discovery, because that's the reason you got All Access, and you've watched all of both seasons of Star Trek Discovery and you're done now, like, what do you do in the meantime? You can watch all these other things that CBS All Access has. If you, if you are killing time waiting for the next season of Stranger Things, Netflix has lots of ways to distract you until it gets here. And, you know, HBO Go.
I call that the dwell factor.
Right.
If you're in there and you're in that service and you've paid for it, you're more likely to munge around looking for stuff within that service to dwell there than you are to switch channels and say, well, Apple's got this possibly award-winning thing. I'm going to jump over and go check it out.
Inertia is powerful. Like, if you, I mean, that's the thing. If you want people to subscribe, though, like, suppose I watch the Ron Moore show that they talked about at Dub Dub, and then I've watched the morning show that they talked about, and I've watched Oprah's thing, then, you know, like, once I've watched the big stuff, or maybe I want to take a break from that, right? Like, I've seen Ron Moore's stuff and I want to change gears. What do I have? My options are limited.
The reason they're thinking that way is because the price that Disney came out with, Apple was charging $10 a month for Apple Music. Mm-hmm. And they were probably thinking that video productions are more valuable than simple 3-minute songs. And so we're going to charge more for video than we're going to charge for songs. So they were thinking it might be $12.95 a month. Because we're so award-winning and we're so cool and we're Apple and this is original content and it's so wonderful. And then Disney opens the vault for $6.95 a month and Apple goes, oops.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Again, I think part of the problem here is the then what factor, because there's nothing in the meantime. We haven't seen any content deals from Apple. We've seen Apple wrote a bunch of checks to make new things specifically for Apple TV Plus. But we haven't seen anything about, like, they wrote a check so you can watch all of Andy Griffith or Three's Company or Magnum P.I. or Murder, She Wrote or anything that is a series that is older and exists that people might want to revisit. We haven't seen anything like that. So we don't know what kind of library they have behind all the original stuff, because that's how everybody else is making this happen, is there's new stuff. You know, to go back to Disney for a minute, Disney is making a show called The Mandalorian, which looks so cool. And it's a new original piece of Star Wars content. But when I'm done watching that show, they have all the Star Wars movies, and they have all these other things that I can watch in the meantime before the next season of The Mandalorian comes out, or before the next season of whatever other original thing is that they're doing that I forgot because they told me Star Wars and I kind of forgot about the rest of them. So,
well, that brings up the subject of whether Apple's going to have signature shows. It's one thing to have a whole bunch of stuff that's good, but to develop a jackpot show and call it, and nurture it and bring it into public awareness as a franchise and a signature series, that's tough. That depends on the whims and the tastes of the viewers that Apple hasn't figured out yet.
Right. That's another huge piece of it. So when we find out more, or I know, Andrew, you're keeping a particularly close eye on this, so you'll be able to let us know if Apple does sign any library deals. And as soon as they do, we will come back and talk about it. I promise. So in the meantime, I want to thank both of you for being here today. Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And John, thanks for being here to talk to us about Tim's graduation address and Apple's award stance.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.